You're listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for coming to Carnegie Endowment. I'm Jim Collins. I run the Russian-Eurasian program at Carnegie Endowment. And it's my great pleasure today to have someone speak to us about Georgia, who is a longtime personal friend and someone who has been a very key figure in the developments of Georgia over the last half decade. Kaga Bendukidze, his last position with the government was as head of chancery for the president. And he has been a key figure in a number of different positions in the government of Georgia, essentially focusing on the reform and restructuring of the Georgian economy in the post-Rose Revolution period. And so I am most grateful that he would join us today. He has a presentation, and we will then have a discussion. I think he is prepared to take on just about any question you can give him. And I hope that we will be able to bring some new thought and new perspective to looking at Georgia from this capital with his presentation. So, Kaka, I turn the floor over to you.
Thank you.
And your presentation.
Actually, I want to talk about not only about reforms, but from my point of view, why Georgia is important country, which is maybe a result of my personal ego to be a citizen of important country, but I hope that you can share that. And I think it lies in geopolitics, values and reforms, and how Georgia's case can be used more widely for other countries. You know, I think, I mean, this audience knows well that Georgia was on the crossroads of East and West, and actually it's the most eastern point of the West. Actually, Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia, is the most eastern Christian city in Eurasia. And of course, it was conquered and struck many times by different neighbors or non-neighbors. Latest was August War with Russia, with ...228 civilians and 160 militaries killed, more than 100,000 persons displaced, and civil damages roughly 8% of GDP. It was working as partner for United States and Europe in several peacekeeping operations. And today, Georgia, in my understanding, is the way how Central Asia can access the rest of the world. Because if you look to Georgia's position, Georgia has access to the sea, and Azerbaijan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Afghanistan, they have access to the rest of the world through Russia, Georgia, or Iran, not taking into account some minor trypasses through China, for example, or ability for Afghanistan to deal with Pakistan. And I think that it's very clear that this situation, where two big allies, Russia and Iran, are split by this road to freedom, let's say, it can be converted easily in that situation when actually Russia and, I mean, if Georgia fail, Georgia become controlled by Russia, it means that there will be no way for these countries other than to to have some trade-off between Iran and Russia, nothing else. So, but returning to what was done and why it is important. Actually, when we were launching the reforms in 2004, these reforms were based on the values which I hope we all share. It was freedom, openness, rule of law, human rights, and tolerance. And how it can be translated into particular reforms? It means changing Soviet-style institutions, which were institutions for institutions, not institutions for public, for citizens, putting citizens' choice in the focus and servicing this citizen's choice, which is absolutely another thing than these institutions were built for, and building the system where merit matters. And the system proved to be quite resilient because it was resilient to Russian embargo. Russian embargo was imposed in 2006, and as a result, our economic growth was up to 10%. Without Russian embargo, we'll have maybe 11.5% or 12%. It was quite resilient to war with Russia, and after war, we have that damage, and of course, a contraction of economy, but we have stability in the banking system. Everything was functioning, and it is quite resilient to today financial meltdown, global financial meltdown, and I hope that we can get from this mess earlier than some other countries. So, and I cannot talk about, because I mean, I think there is not enough time today, because there was extremely big amount of different reforms. Some of them are quite big and radical, some of them are quite minor, some of them are important for us, but it's difficult to explain to you because it happens in the United States maybe 100 years ago. We go through radical, for example, and I just have several examples, like reforming bureaucracy, by reducing number of agencies, halving number of public servants, increasing stepwise their salaries 15-fold, and creating one-stop shops almost just to serve the public, not to serve the institutions. As an example, it's for example, what we have done in business registration, which is maybe not the big deal in terms that not all citizens are going to register their businesses, but so we merge several registration in one process. We reduce time required from 30 days to 1 hour. We reduce paperwork from 7 to 2. It's just one application, one stop shop. You're applying to tax authority, and that's all. We reduce the costs as a result, and final result was that the business entry was increasing. Either today, there is very significant business activity, and approximately 3,000 businesses are registered a month, which is, I think, in general, is very good result for small country with 4 million citizens, and especially taking into account that now we are in crisis, global crisis. Another thing which I am very proud personally, and is I think it's one of the most simplest reform with the best ratio of cost-benefit, because it was quite easy to overcome the to some bureaucratic struggle. And it's just opening, how we're opening our country, just opening borders. So what was the visa policy before? You should apply for visa going in person to consulate. In the United States, there's, I think, 2 or 3. Then have three different durations of visa, usually issued single entry visa. And what was done in 2004? So we just say, for what we need to control, so to require visa for citizens of developed countries. What's the rationale? I mean, can we do it better than Homeland Security, for example, or German Minister of Interior? No. And now, if you are citizen of 56 most developed countries, including EU, United States, Canada, Japan, etc., you don't need any visa, and you can stay 360 days in Georgia without any paperwork. If you need visa, so you are not citizen of these 56 countries, you can get visa on the border, and we have restricted entry, more complicated visa issuance for countries like Afghanistan, for example. And also it is much more wide opportunities for entrance. I mean, it's very easy. It's not about being libertarian or socialist. It's just about not having stupid regulation, which is not creating any benefit. It's just torturing people who want to come to your country. If you go to other reforms, I think the list is too big, and if you have time, we can discuss this later. And what was the result of that reforms? In foreign direct investment index, which was produced by UN party, UNCTAD, we go on the ninth place. Economic freedom index, 32nd. Some other indices also, we improve quite a lot our position. But that's about, some other people assessing what you have done. The real measure is the economic. So the GDP growth was, average growth was 9% till war period. Our inflow of foreign direct investments was 20% in 2007. It's very diversified, and there is no single champion. If you look to countries, how foreign direct investments are spread among countries, or how foreign trade, we were a country dependent on trade with Russia. This left lower gram. Now we diversify our trade, and Russia is just one of the trade partner. And this is trade partner we are only importing. We are not exporting because Russia imposed embargo, but it's an informal embargo, so there is no formal document like president's decree or whatever, resolution of cabinet that Georgian goods cannot access Russia. But everyone knows that you cannot sell anything to Russia. And if someone tries to import, this is seized immediately. The foreign trade, this creates a tremendous potential for growth of foreign trade, and Georgia is becoming more and more the trading hub for neighboring countries. And you can see that the total foreign trade in 2003 was 2 billion, and now it is 8 billion, 2007. So, and we think that that is one of the way how the economy can grow. And Georgia's case shows that, and why Georgia matters, that the values we talk about, the freedom, the openness, tolerance, etc., converted to reforms, they create good economic growth, they create development, they create wealth for nation. And I think that from that point of view, Georgia can be a very significant showcase for many neighboring or not only neighboring countries. And that's not just a hypothesis, that's what is happening. So the reformers from many countries, from Central Asian countries, from Africa, they are coming, they are asking for the experience of reforms. And actually, that's the, I think that the Western decision. So what do you like more? And I'm open for questions.
All right, let's, Mike.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
Mike, can you wait for a mic just a second?
Oh, okay. A mic for Mike.
Yeah.
My name is Mike Haltzell. I'm with Johns Hopkins, SICE, and McLarty Associates. Thank you for your presentation. One issue that has to do with values you didn't mention is freedom of the media, an area that I think Georgia needs some improvement in. But I think everything you said points to great progress, and I congratulate Georgia on it. With regard to the media, I think that the U.S.-Georgian charter, the bilateral one that was signed a few months ago, calls for non-military parts of it, include improving free media, so I hope that will improve. My question is the following. You say at the end, your choice. I'm not sure who your is. I mean, if it's my personal choice, I'm all for getting Georgia into NATO and the EU. If it's my government's choice, I think we probably are. But I have to report the bad news that for the foreseeable future, neither is going to happen because significant countries in Western Europe oppose it. So my question is very simple. Is the progress that you have outlined, has it become so permanently embedded into the fabric of life in Georgia that it can survive a fairly lengthy period of frustration on your goals of getting into these two organizations?
So that means that that's not your person, but some people's choice. So about freedom of media, I think that this need to be analyzed more carefully. And if we are talking about printed media, I cannot imagine higher level of freedom than is in Georgia. And the Georgian law about media freedom is not allowing me, for example, as person with which can be in public interest to sue the journalist for just telling fairy tales about me. And from that point of view, I think that it's much freer. And I think that 95% of Georgian media is heavily supportive to opposition. And that's way how they are making money. Just, telling every day the story about bad government. about TV, which was the main concern, I think that if you really look to Georgian TV, you'll never say that. The problem was in 2007, in November, when the police forcefully closed the Imedi TV station, which was actually demanding for public to go and throw the government. I was maybe not the most happiest man at that moment, but I'm not sure that there was many options to be done. And if you what's the structure of TV in Georgia? I mean, there is three main channels covering all Georgia's territory, and these three channels actually there is lot of presence of opposition and debates and I'm personally not very happy what they are telling about me, for example, or our government. And there is several smaller TV channels which are covering mainly capital city, which actually means 30% of population or 25% of population. And these TV channels are owned by opposition, and they are covering only issues about opposition. So, of course, we can improve, and we can improve that by granting more licenses to independent TV channels. We have no restriction for foreign TV channels coming to Georgia, or for foreign investors owning Georgian TV, and that can be done also by them. And otherwise, I think that in 3 or 5 years from now, or 4 years from now, the internet TV can be much broader used worldwide and in Georgia also. I think that comes maybe from more from history than from reality. And I think that there is also a way how we can have more freedom on TV. That's if we can have more responsibility on TV, because today our media regulation is that media can be absolutely irresponsible and you cannot do anything. For example, I was accused in many scenes, and I hire the lawyers and I ask my colleagues in government, the Minister of Justice, is there any chance that I can get any result? And they said, no, there is no chance. None Minister of Justice, none lawyers whom I pay tell me that I can do anything. Yeah. So granting more, having responsible TV will mean that we can have more freedom on TV. And I think that when I'm talking, it looks like strange story, how it can happen. And it's very interesting because after some this fairy tale, for example, about that I'm Russian spy or whatever, I'm eating kids or whatever, goes to media, then it is repeated in Russian media, and then some respected persons from Spiegel, for example, then they repeat in Spiegel, and at the end of the day, it looks like that it's common sense that, okay, of course, everyone knows that Ben Tukhidze is eating kids. Yeah, it's his usual diet. Yeah. So that's about about media. Answering about our survival, I think that it's very clear that Russia's main goal is to have controlled Georgia. Good situation, just not to have a Georgia at all, to split it in several small countries, all controlled by Russia, but at minimum having controlled Georgia. And reasons they are very clear, I think, because that's the way how Russia can dictate to every other country in South, former Soviet Union, to become part of some new Soviet Empire. And they try different things. First, they try embargo. It has no result. Then they try war. It has no result. Now they are trying to support any opposition, not because they like that opposition, but because opposition will mean changing this regime, and changing this regime means that any next regime will be weaker than today government, and then it can be changed more and more and more. And So the question is that can we survive from that point of view, not from economic point of view. I mean, we can survive, but from permanently brewed political turmoil supported by big neighboring country. I think that one of the reasons why I'm talking with you is that to explain and to share this view that it's important to have independent Georgia. It's not about this or that government. It's not Saakashvili being president or having parliamentary republic. It's about not allowing Russia to deal with Georgian internal policy. That's the important. I think that we'll do our best to survive. It's not very easy because the proportion is not on our side. Russian economy is 90 times bigger than Georgian economy, and the Russian government can use 10 or 50 times or 90 times or 200 times more funds to deal with Georgia than Georgia can do it by itself. So that's the big issue, I'm optimist, and I think we can overcome that. But of course, I think without clear understanding in Europe and in the United States that Russia is not just one of the European countries, but located a little bit more Eastern and having some Asian, North Asia as part of its territory, by understanding that today Russia's regime is not looking to have any will to be changed, understanding that Russia's government or ruling elite is recognizing all your gestures, which for you means openness, recognizing as weakness, yeah? So if all you, if United States, France, Germany, they don't understand that, I mean, they lose. We'll lose first, and you'll lose next. Of course, we'll lose everything, you lose something. That's the difference.
Jeff Goldstein from Freedom House. Thank you for your presentation. You focused a lot on what Georgia has done and on Russia and the outside world, but I'd like to ask you to look at sort of what Georgia needs to do. I mean, we have a situation right now where you have an opposition whose policy seems to come down to Saakashvili needs to leave, and if he doesn't, we'll have demonstrations. You have a president who is at least implying openly in public that the opposition is just getting funding from the Russians. What do you think the Georgian political class needs to do right now to get its act together to move the country forward?
First of all, let me answer on your comments. Part of Georgian opposition is funded from Russia. I know that from different sources, including sources which are not from my colleagues in Georgian government. Some of them are just too naive not to understand that. It does not mean that Russia is bribing hundreds or thousands of people. No. It is just supporting someone's ambitions to become next president or next prime minister, whatever. What we need to do, I think that we need to do several things. First of all, we need to continue the reforms to provide better situation, better economic growth to nation. Second, I think that we need and I think it's very important for a political situation, we need to maybe change our political system, which is very easy to say and very difficult to do. And by that way, providing, let's say, another option for public, for electorate. Third thing is that we need to have closer ties with the United States and Europe, and I think that having closer ties with Europe, it's good to have, but it's very difficult because I think that Europe has their own agenda, how they are looking to that, and being involved in the discussions with the European Union and knowing that agenda, I think that it's very weak agenda, and we'll get no result for many years. We'll get only negative outcomes. So the U.S. Being closer to U.S. is important. So in general, the question is that just having even more freedom, more transparency, and more openness, there is no other way how we can deal. I think that supporting the idea that we should have the elections now is crazy, because that means that when you have any person from the government, dismissed, or someone else decide that he can become a president, I just awake and say, well, why am I not a president? And let's have presidential elections now. We cannot create that type of behavior in our society, that everyone who wants to be president can then go to a central street with some 2,000 to 20,000 or 100,000 supporters, and we'll have new elections. Yeah. So I think that it's very important for everyone to understand that we have our constitutional period to have elections. We'll have next presidential elections in 2013. If we don't have some big constitutional reform before, we have local elections next year, for example. And it's not interesting for opposition, because having local elections, it's too headache, yeah? And you don't get the main prize. We'll have after that the parliamentary elections. So, I think that compromising with this means that we'll create some new type of political behavior, which I am not very supportive.
John?
I wonder if I could...
John Elkind first. I'll come to the others.
Excuse me, Jonathan Elkind, Brookings Institution. I wonder if I could get ask a follow-up question concerning the answer that you just gave. If Georgia were to engage in a changing in the political system or some kind of a constitutional process, as you referred to it, what could that be? What would it logically include? The second point, while I think many people around the table understand the impulse that you don't want to reinforce the idea that any disaffected senior member of the political class, upon leaving government, says, oops, I want to be president, therefore something must happen preterm. Is that actually what's happening in Georgia right now? Because the impression that one has from farther away is that there is something more serious going on. The accusation that one hears from people in quite different, quite varied political positions is that there is a problem of excessive centralization of decision-making and increasing non-transparency. Is that a fair, are these fair accusations? Thank you.
First of all, from the end, I never think in that terms that there is feeling that there is less transparency now than it was in Georgia. I don't know where, when it was, because maybe I like to have more transparency, but I cannot say that there was more transparency 1 year ago or 4 years ago or 10 years ago. I think that the level of transparency is increasing, not decreasing. Is it sufficient or not? That's another question. And you always can have more transparency and more transparency of decision making. I think that a few words about this, how people feel that why they can become president. When we have political question 2000 in November 2007, the president's decision, which was maybe very open and good for that moment, was to have a new presidential elections, which he wins. But I think that that was very bad in another hand, because it creates that model that, after, if you press on the government, if you have demonstrations, so you can achieve new elections. So now that's part of our political culture, suddenly become part of our political culture, that if you go to Rustaveli Avenue and stay there several weeks, maybe have several clashes with police, so for sure you can get new presidential elections. And that was the negative outcome from what happens in 2007. I think that that's why I think that we need to go through some big constitutional changes, because otherwise there will be this permanent willingness of some of the politicians to be involved in the game. I think that we can go to we cannot afford any political system with weak executive branch. Yeah, because that means that country will be, this country will disappear. I want to say that we are concerned about things which, in developed countries, in the United States, you are not concerned. You are not concerned about, Germans are not concerned about disappearance of Germany, and we are concerned about disappearance of Georgia, because it happens several times in history. The last united Georgia, independent Georgia, was 800 years ago, yeah, and then it was 3 years after October Revolution in Russia, when Russia was dissociated, and then it was returned to Soviet Russia and after the Soviet Union, and we want to maintain our independence. That's the important, and maybe we are among very few nations in the world which are formally recognized and formally independent and really independent and et cetera, but who has real chances to lose their independence. So, and that's why we cannot afford any system with weak executive branch. So executive branch needs to be very strong. So there is no idea, what I'm telling now, it's my personal ideas, that I think that we can look to different models, of course, but I think that the high level of stability can be achieved if we have something like Westminster model, members of parliament and ministers, and we can look to a country which has something like that, like in Israel, which has a lot of challenges also, and is managing these challenges very openly and transparently, and moving to that type of constitutional structure, of course. But that's purely my personal opinion. There is no discussion in Georgian elite about what it can be. I think it's one of the first discussions of that type we can have. So situation is not very easy, of course, because if we compromise now, we as a I'm not a part of the government, but I mean, as today government, which I am support compromise now, that will help only short term. Okay, we'll have elections, and the result of these elections, I mean, it's quite clear that the national movement will have majority, or national movement with some potential allies will have majority in parliament, and but that will not mean the end of the story. That will mean that half year from that moment there will be new wave of this request, because let me understand very clearly, because there is another country influence. It's not just political process going in Georgia. It's about Georgian political process being influenced by Russia. Yeah, that's need to be clearly understood. And there is no, it's not very easy. For example, how, I mean, you either if you become the very big supporters, and today, and I mean, Barack Obama, Angela Merkel, Sarkozy, and Gordon Brown, whatever, everyone become very big supporter to Georgia. It's, you cannot deal with this type of influence, because it is not influence declared by Georgian by Russian government, and I mean, it's not open desire of Russian government. Yeah, how we can deal that? I mean, no way. Yeah, so that's the biggest challenge. Why we are so careful about doing things, and changing things, and I mean, moving forward with this opposition demand.
Next to John.
Keith Crane, the RAND Corporation. I'd like to follow up on that question. First, you know, the Russian embargo has really failed, and I'd like you to kind of comment, why do you think it's been such a failure? And then moving on from that is, what types of...
Can you repeat about embargo?
It failed, the Russian embargo. Why do you think that was the case? Moving on from that, where do you see Russian... How do you see Russia attempting to pursue its foreign policy goals against Georgia in the next couple of years? What influences aside from working through the political system?
No, about the Russian embargo, I mean, it's quite clear, because the economy was reformed. It was resilient. There was a lot of flexibility in the economy. And also government, I mean, was quite proactive. Russian embargo affected 70,000 families, which is 80% of Georgia's population. These families were involved in winemaking, and the main market was Russia. Of course, there was no, I mean, my magic bullet. I mean, the wine export from Georgia today is more diversified than it was, but it's not on that value. It was, I mean, of course it affected Georgia, but it affected on, let's say, 1% of GDP or something like that. And if we have 1% growth, it will kill Georgia, yeah. But as we have very high growth, it has no such an effect on Georgia. Simultaneously, there was not only this embargo, also Russia hiked prices for gas, which was supplied to Georgia. And I mean, that's, if I can focus more on that type of story. So what can happen if a country has situation when prices for one of the major energy sources hike up twice? Yeah, one can be to subsidize that prices, which was done for some very short period of time. And second is reforming the whole system and deregulating the gas market, which happens after. And the deregulation of gas market is one of the also things which I favor a lot, because it is a way for energy independence of our country. Yeah. And if we look today to what happens with popularity of government. Government was so popular in 2003. The Saakashvili's approval rate was 90-something, and why it is now not such a high, why it is around 40 or something like that. The answer is very, very clear. And I think it's very right thing, because the responsible politician don't need to have high approval rate just to maintain this high approval rate. He needs high approval rate to be invested in important changes, changes which are sensitive for population, like deregulation of gas market or partial deregulation of electricity market and other things. They cannot be popular, but they are creating basis for long-term sustainability of the country, of economy. Yeah, for example, country being completely dependent on Russia as an energy source, country with permanent blackouts, and if someone visits Georgia in 2003, 2004, and 2005, they'll say, okay, there was no electricity, I mean, part of the day in the capital city. Now we are the net exporter of electricity. Yeah, and of course, there is a cost paid for that. There's price paid for that. Less popularity, less support of the government. But of course, that's the way how it's like. If you have a lot of money and never invest it, yeah, but then what you need a lot of money just and never spend it, never invest it. It has no function for you in that case. So how we react on that type of things like Russian embargo or this energy blackmail, let's say, of Georgia, and now we are much more independent and much more sustainable. So, what was the second question?
What do you expect Russia to do over the next 2 years in terms of policy?
I think that the nearest year they'll try to use these internal policy things like supporting more or less some of the opposition and, I mean, activating them to ask some political change within Georgia. How it is structured, yeah? So they were sure that after embargo will fail completely. Yeah, that does not happen. Okay. Then after war, there will be regime change. Now, after this political situation, there will be regime change. So year after, they'll recognize that, okay, it's not working, and they'll try to find some new solution. I'm not such a smart to say which solution they'll find in a year from now. I don't know. Maybe another small war or something like that. Maybe dealing with Azerbaijan to encourage Azerbaijan to cut any flow of goods through Georgia or something like that. I don't know. Many options.
John Evans.
John Evans, formerly State Department. Leaving aside the question of how the crisis last August got started, one result of it was this unfortunate move by the Russian Federation to recognize Abkhazia and South Ossetia, which even Russia had not done before that. Has anyone been thinking in Tbilisi about a strategy for trying to recover these two breakaway provinces?
I think that in a very broad sense, yes. We think that there is no military solution for that, which is quite clear. For me, it was clear either before, because I know what's the size and capacity of Russian militaries. To say that there is some very easy way and there is some roadmap, it would be exaggeration. There is no roadmap, and I think that nobody has understanding how it can be done. I'm just looking to, I don't know, the Germany was divided for 50 years, 40-something years. And at the end of the day, now we have one Germany. I think it depends on, are you optimist or pessimist? As I am optimist, I think that something will happen because everything is changing, and maybe it can happen 10 years from now, maybe it happens 20 years from now. Maybe it happens, I don't know, when nobody will see that. Yeah, maybe it will happen 200 years from now when this is completely another shape. But I think that it's not easy for us to say, okay, what happens, that happens, and now let's recognize that Abkhazia and South Ossetia, they are not parts of parts of Georgia.
Yes. I'm John Glenn from the German Marshall Fund. Your comments about the embargo on the wine make me remember 3 years ago at our Brussels forum, right after the embargo had been announced, when your president arrived with cases of red wine for everyone in the room. It was a clever strategy. I enjoyed very much your presentation of all of the reducing of bureaucracy, the changes in the economy, the openness that have been introduced. It's a story that I think many of us have heard and like hearing about Georgia. But can you tell us really about the most recent period? Is it really, what do you expect after the twin damages of the war and the global financial crisis? In a period when a government is able to show over 10% growth rates, it's an attractive government, but I think there are those of us who worry that in the difficult economic times, there will be increasing pressures on the government and calls for less openness rather than more.
Less openness? For government? No, I don't know why. I want to say that if we look to when we have the political problems, actually, we have political problems when we have high growth. We have quite high growth in 2003, and we have Rose Revolution, and we have the best year, even year, was 2007, and also we have big political problems. I think that because what happens that there is inflation of expectations, and people are demanding more changes. And when we have downturns, I mean, in nearest history, they were quite calm years, and I think it will be same. Of course, if we have elections now, I mean, the result will be worse than it was last time when we have elections. I mean, a year ago, I think that I think that the key for improving situation is economy, and I can say that there is way how it can be improved. What was the result of the reforms? Result of the reforms was a small country growing, and that growth was dependent on foreign direct investments. Yeah, so. What happens now in the world? So now there is no foreign direct investments. I mean, in general, so they dry up. Yeah, but it's an exaggeration. Yeah, because now, of course, there was contraction of money supply, but money does not disappear. Yeah, so we are a small country. $2 billion of foreign direct investments a year makes our growth something like 20%, 10%. Yeah, so. Is $2 billion unbelievable amount of money? I mean, no. If we are talking about what's the amount of money you need to boost up U.S. economy, it's zillions. If we are talking about what you need for a small country like Georgia, it's $2 billion or $1.5 billion. Oh, we can compromise on that. Yeah. So is it possible to attract that amount of investments? Yeah. For sure, it needs more improvements. It means It needs more transparency. It means less risks, and actually, that's the way how it was. One of the pillars of these reforms was that. My personal story. I can tell you for 1 minute. When I came to Georgia, I just came for some conference there. Not being there for 3 years or 4 years before that. And I hear the, at that time, Minister of Economy, and he has very excellent program. I think that program can be welcomed in, some more or less growing Eastern European country, like Slovakia or Czech Republic, something like that. Nothing extraordinary, nothing radical, but sort of improve this. And then President asked me, okay, what do you think about the program? I think it's a very nice program, but not for this country. Because this is country which is with two parts of the country is occupied by neighboring country. At that moment, we have two military bases of Russia, in Ajara and in South Georgia. And we have 200,000 displaced people after 91's war and living in some unbelievable conditions, not having any property. And I said, okay, how this program, which is very nice, very cool, can work for a country with such big problems? If you apply that program to a normal country, you'll have 4% growth. If you apply that program to a country like Georgia, you have minus 2% growth. Yeah, you need to do something extraordinary to counterbalance that problems. So that was how I was invited to join Georgian government and being part of these reforms. And I think that now it's the same situation. Yeah, we cannot by repeating what are doing governments in other countries, in small countries. I'm not talking about big countries which has another options. By repeating that, we cannot achieve the better result. We can achieve the same result. No, we cannot achieve the same result. We can achieve result much lower because, Slovakia is not affected by war with Russia. The last time they were affected by war was 60 years ago, after Munich. We cannot do the same as Bulgaria because, last time they were affected by war also was the same 60 years ago. So we need to do something extraordinary, yeah. And by doing that extraordinary, and I have my own perception of what that or my own ideas what that extraordinary things can be, we can overcome the results of global financial turmoil better than other countries. I want to say also that if you look carefully to what is happening in Georgian economy, the outcomes of war is less important than the outcomes of global financial crisis. I think that actually, I can say about some estimates, one third to two thirds. So one third of problems coming from war and occupation, and two thirds coming from crisis. Why? Because first of all, and thanks to the United States and to some extent to European countries, we get some aid which help to balance that immediate after war situation. Yeah. And that was quite a significant part, speaking frankly. Now the foreign direct investments disappear not only in Georgia, they disappear also in Armenia or in Moldova, which has no war. And by comparing the situation, you can say that there is no big difference. So extraordinary measures in the economy, and also I think the more political confidence building is the answer how we can overcome today's situation. And it depends also how long this downturn or bad situation will continue, but I think that at the end of this year, we can have much better than we are today.
Michael Oakes, Helsinki Commission. even if we believe everything that you say,
so can you speak loud?
Even if we believe and agree with everything that you say, particularly about Russian intentions in Georgia, there's still a very peculiar and problematic situation emerging. In November 2007, when opposition demonstrators assembled in Tbilisi, as I recall at the time, the only high-level former opposition figure who was supporting them was Irakli Okruashvili, maybe Salome Zurabishvili, I don't remember when she left the government. Today, There are at least several more that I can think of. There's Zurab Nogay Deli, there's Irakli Alasanya, Nino Bourjanadze. Some of these people, a lot of them, are people that Misha Saakashvili himself appointed. Mike, I have three questions. Are we around this table supposed to believe that high-level former Georgian government officials whom Misha himself appointed and whom many of the people around this table know personally and have known for years, that they are either witting or unwitting Russian agents of influence? Second question, if they are, how could Misha have appointed them? And third question, when the demonstrators go to the streets again April 9th, as they are saying they plan to do, do you know if the government is planning to use force again to disperse them?
No, maybe I was misunderstood, but I never say that all opposition wants to, or they are puppets of Russia. I want to say that definitely Nogay Deli, I think he has his own political agenda, which is, he's not influenced by Russians, and same is Alasanya. The issue is that result of the actions can be profitable for Russia, but of course they are not influenced, I'm sure. That does not mean that, that Alasanya is sympathetic. I'm sympathetic to Alasanya, but of course he's just a person who, talking with his neighbors, in Tbilisi, decide that he can become president. That's all. And maybe talking also here in Washington, D.C. with some people, he decided in the New York that he can become president. The same is for quite a big part of opposition. I cannot say the same about Bourjanadze. And because Bourjanadze, from my understanding, is the person who is Russia really want to support, and Bourjanadze, she was not appointed by Misha to any position because it was a coalition in 2003 between Zhvania, Bourjanadze, and Saakashvili. Yeah, so none of them was appointed by Misha, not Bourjanadze, not Zhvania, or not Saakashvili was appointed by Bourjanadze or Zhvania. Yeah, it was a coalition. So, and internally, Bourjanadze was the most first criticist of what was happening in Georgia and the reforms. And I think more or less linked to Russian situation is Bourjanadze. It does not mean that that action of others are against Russia or pro-Russia. It means that they are acting in their self-interest and maybe not understanding that, there would be very bad result. For example, because I cannot understand, for example, how there can be the regime change today without Russian occupation. Yeah. Which will be welcomed maybe by many people in the United States or Europe, just because Russia plays a responsible role in Georgia or something like that. Yeah, how it can happen? Because if demonstrators, which I hope will never happen, but will take control over the parliament, for example, something like that. Of course, it does not mean that then after that they will be very, very fine, very nice, very clean, and very happy development, yeah? So if that means something, it can be something terrible after that. And if these people are ready to do that terrible thing because they think that will help them to make some political gain. That's why I'm so concerned. But the important is that I think I don't say anything you need to believe, yeah? If there is anything you have a question, you can ask that question. Is it right or wrong? If you are not thinking that Russia wants to control Georgia, I mean, maybe you can explain why they don't want to control Georgia. Is there any rational why they should say, no, we don't want to control Georgia? I cannot understand why. Russia wants to control not only Georgia, but any neighboring country. And that's official Russian position, that they have some region of special interest on how they call that. Oblast Osobo Vlianya, I forget.
How?
Privileged interest, yeah. It's not my idea. My family name is Bendukidze, not Medvedev, yeah? I never said that. They said that. So what means, okay, let's assume that, let's return to map. Okay, Russia. So which country can be in the sphere of privileged interest? India, like it was in, when there was a Peter the Great, or like Zhirinovsky want to conquer India? No. Or which country? Ghana? Bolivia? Peru? South Korea? Unlikely. So, if there would be President Medvedev and you ask him which countries can be on this sphere of your privileged interests, what he will say? I think he will say Belarus, Ukraine, Moldova, Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, etc. What else he can say? South Africa? No. And not New Zealand. And you don't need to believe in that. You just need to calculate that. Is it possible for Russia to not to have interest in any of these countries?
Excuse me. I'm not questioning Russia's interests in controlling Georgia.
Yeah,
I'm trying to understand why, of all the people in Georgia, only Misha Saakashvili is capable of guaranteeing Georgia's independence, as opposed to some of the people he himself appointed to very high positions.
No, I think that, for example, let me say that I think that many others, but I think, for example, that Nogai Deli or Alassania, they can protect Georgia's interests in the same way. But the question how they can become the government, that's the question. I'm not supporting what they are doing now. But I think that they are, of course, they are Georgian patriots, and they don't want the country to become part of Russia. And I worked with Nogai Deli for 3.5 years, and now I know him as a person who was doing things based on Georgia's interests. But that does not mean that, and that means that, of course, if he become whomever, I don't know, next time prime minister or president or tsar, he will protect Georgian interests. The question is, what's the way for that? If that way includes preliminary elections, I think that the preliminary elections are the bad thing, because that creates the new political culture. And if we have preliminary elections, for example, in fall, that means that we'll have the next preliminary elections in 2010 and maybe then in 2011, yeah? Because by the preliminary elections, no strong government can be built up. It's not about personality, and it's not about Saakashvili. It's about the way how opposition will take power. Yeah? It's only about that. And of course, I mean, it will be completely wrong if we say, okay, there is only one person, and there is only one political team which can take responsibility for Georgia. I mean, one political team, maybe there is no other that type political teams, I mean, that strong, but of course not single person. I mean, definitely not single person. The question is about how it can happen. And does that way benefits Russia or not? Does way how opposition take office benefits Russia or don't benefits Russia? That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Toby Davis, U.S. State Department. If for whatever reason the aid that's been promised to Georgia from the countries around the world, I guess it's in the next year or so, does not materialize, how will Georgia, or what do you believe the government will do to try and handle the economic situation?
From my personal very strong extreme economic point of view, I mean, I never see significant benefits in foreign aid. And I was always advocating to say no to any foreign aid. So from that point of view, I can say that nothing terrible will happen if we will be prepared for that and do another changes in economic life, in regulations, in how we attracting investments, etc., etc. Also, I want to say that some of this so-called aid is not an aid at all. Yeah, for example, widely used. For example, in the Georgian media, international, that IMF is helping Georgian government. No, IMF is not helping. IMF lent 5% interest rate money to Georgian government. Why it is called help? I can lend Georgian government at the same rate money, yeah? And because now my money is, European banks at very, very low interest rate. Yeah, but I can lend at the same rate, yeah? It's not a help. It's just, I give you money, you return me money back with some interest, yeah? That's all. There is projects which are funded by Asian Development Bank, but that's projects which Asian Development Bank is funding are based on his own interest because they are making money as they based on their mandate. Some of this money, and especially it's important, and I think that the United States is the more or less exclusion from this rule. The U.S. support was mainly just giving money to Georgian government, saying, okay, now you have problems and you can spend that money as you decide. So that's, why we can appreciate that. But other hands, European Union wants to spend €200 million. Sounds good. But if you look, what is that €200 million? This is €200 million spent for advisory services from European experts. What they can do, what's the add value created for €200 million of advices? Can anyone imagine €200 million of advices? Huh? How anyone can be advised for €200 million? No way, yeah? So, and that's why I think if we don't have that advices, does it have any negative effect on Georgia? No, it can have only positive effect. Yeah. So I think that, of course, from a short-term point of view, of course, if you were expecting that now we have some inflow of that type of capital, for example, to build some road by World Bank funding, and you get nothing, of course, in that short-term period, you'll have problems. But I never see any country which was built up by World Bank. Yeah? If World Bank can help, we'll have flourishing Africa. Yeah? Where is African miracles? No one in World Bank can tell you about that. Yeah? Only African country which has, significant results was embargoed, yeah, South Africa. So I think that nothing will happen. Of course, there will be some disappointment. That's true. There will be less Western supportive mood, of course, because people think that if someone helps you, it's good for you, which is wrong. Yeah. But we can overcome that also, of course, and substitute that by more private capital inflow for what we need more reforms, and that's maybe I it's not very good to talk about that here and now, but I think that that's the bad thing coming from this foreign aid. That if you want to attract private capital, you need to have reforms, you need to have stability, you need to have transparency, because that's the imminent features which are required by private capital to go to the country. And when you have this state-sponsored or state-supported or state aid to another country, I mean, you are not requiring the same. You are not you are requiring something which maybe is not so important for real development. Yeah, so I'll prefer to have the private investments instead of having government supports. But that does not mean that we don't appreciate the government, which in this hard time is taking part of their budget and helping Georgia. It's coming from they want to do good, but they don't know how to do that.
If I may have a couple of comments and one question. Okay, the first comment concerning this opposition toward the incumbent among those who have been appointed by those incumbent. The situation which, Michael, you are some kind of attracting our attention in Georgia is not unique for Georgia. It is quite common for this part of the world, but maybe not even for this part of the world. Just let's recall, Mr. Yeltsin has so-called appointed, actually, helped substantially Ruslan Hasbulatov to become the head of the Russian parliament. And who, after that, Mr. Hasbulatov became, he became in opposition to Mr. Yeltsin. Mr. Yeltsin attracted Mr. Rutskoy as his vice president. Actually, he created Mr. Rutskoy from nowhere, from nobody. And Mr. Rutskoy became in opposition to Mr. Yeltsin. Mr. Yeltsin has appointed Mr. Primakov as a prime minister, and Mr. Primakov happened to be in opposition to Mr. Yeltsin. Mr. Yeltsin has appointed Mr. Putin as his some kind of successor and future president, and by his doing, Mr. Putin became the some kind of the most efficient oppositioner in action to what Mr. Yeltsin was doing. What happened with Mr. Putin? Mr. Putin has appointed Mr. Kasyanov as a prime minister. Where is Mr. Kasyanov right now? He's in opposition. I will continue with this list, but just look into this, even the so-called tandem between Mr. Putin and Medvedev. What is the main topic in Washington and many other places? Whether Mr. Medvedev will be in opposition to Mr. Putin or not, and this is the main debate right now. So it's not usual in this part of the world. And even I can recall in some other countries, for example, Mr. Colin Powell has served in the George W. Bush first administration, and after that, Colin Powell has endorsed Mr. Obama as his president, not Mr. McCain. So even here, something similar could happen. So that is why it's not something unusual, extremely connected with some particular personalities. What actually makes the Georgian case really very important and just matter to attract our attention, this is my second comment, is that in Georgia, Mr. Saakashvili is the first person who has been elected twice to this position as the president, in year 2004 officially and in year 2008. Before that, Mr. Gamsakhurdia, the first president who has been elected, has been removed from his office by force, as we remember in the Civil War. Mr. Shevardnadze is the second president, has been removed from his office by force, fortunately without any murders, any killing, but he has been removed in the Rose Revolution. So that is why, as we all know, for stability of democratic institutions, it's very important that power, including the supreme power in the country, would come to the opposition in a peaceful, orderly, some kind of way according to the rules established in this country. So that is why to continue these very bad stands that have been developed earlier it would just continue this some kind of vicious circles from which country could not some kind of leave. And this is a not unique, once again, experience of Georgia. Just look into the neighboring countries. In Azerbaijan, the first president, Elchebey, has been removed from the office by force. Okay, Mr. Aliyev Senior died by himself, but just he has been some kind of succeeded by his son, also which cannot be considered is an incredibly democratic way, as we understand. In Armenia, the first president, Ter Petrosyan, has been removed by force from his office by army. And after that, in the next transition from Mr. Kacharyan to the current Armenian president, it was, as we know, was a shooting and some kind of 17 people have been killed in Yerevan. So that is why for this part of the world, this is some kind of the almost embedded, some kind of built-in, some kind of forceful transition of power from one person to another. And what now? What is now being built by Georgians so far with relative success is to continue the process of building democratic constitutions also in many directions, including in the most important area of succession in power. So that is why, from any point of view, for success of this process, it is incredibly important that the current president, even very many people or some people are not happy with him, would continue his term, and after that, in some kind of term would come, would have the regular election. If we look into the history of the United States for the last 220 years, how many extraordinary elections of the president happened in this country? We all know the answer. No, zero, none. Nothing happened. Even some presidents were extremely with incredibly low ratings, with no popularity. And just over the last some kind of 8 years, what we've heard, including here in D.C., in Washington, how many people were unhappy with everything what has been done by the previous administration. But I cannot recall that either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or anybody else would call for extraordinary election of the U.S. president. Everybody was waiting for November, year 2008, and everybody participated in this. So what we are looking right now in Georgia is exactly the attempt to create this new tradition. And the attempts of some other people, with some with good intentions, some probably with not good intentions, doesn't matter. They're just not to allow such traditions to be created and to be sustained. And my last point, if I may, if just it's some kind of the question. The question actually is not so much even for our speaker today, but just the general, this respected and very knowledgeable audience. The question, what would be the most appropriate, the most rational, and the most effective policy in a small country which is under permanent attack from mighty neighbor? So Mr. Speaker did not some kind of reveal, did not discuss, it was not topic of his presentation, but in the last 5.5 years, and actually in the last 9 years, to be absolutely correct, Georgia, regardless of personalities, actually, it's not Mr. Saakashvili personality. During Mr. Shevardnadze, the territory of Georgia has been bombed by the Russian airplanes. It was not in Mr. Saakashvili term, but in year 2003, February 2003, the Russian government sent huge number of tanks into South Ossetia. It was 9 months before Rose Revolution, so it was not related to Mr. Saakashvili in no regard. And we'll just mention all these incredible list of these explosions, attacks, killings, some kind of cutting energy supplies, establishing different types of embargo, and now supporting part of opposition, supporting of ethnic minorities, including Armenian minorities in Javakheria or Azerbaijanian minorities in Barcelo and many other places. And it just has been stated very, very clearly by the highest, the top level of the Russian authorities many, many times, that they are not happy, to put it very mildly, with Georgia. They would like to change it, as stated. The question is, what would be the right approach for such a small country that is under such attack and where this kind of the differences in power and potential are so clear, and with some kind of lack of desire to support institutionally, like with the NATO membership or some other membership for this particular country. Just let's try to imagine that you are not Mr. Saakashvili, but you are another Michael, just as the president of Georgia. So what would be your some kind of idea? What would be your recommendations and advices for such a government? Thank you.
Well, look, I think we can all think about that, and we'll talk to you, Andre, at some point.
No, what we don't supposed to do, we don't supposed to relax and enjoy.
Yeah.
I don't want to relax and enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to definitely have one final question and just use my prerogative. What do you believe the priorities, or if you will, the agenda for the Georgian government is likely to be in some priority order over the next 6 months to a year? Because up to a certain point for a long time, recovering the territories was a key priority for any Jordan government. And that brought tensions for a variety of reasons with a lot of different players. What do you think will now be the sort of agenda if you look forward? In sum, if we're going to talk with the current Georgian government as a new administration, What are we going to hear? Are there most important concerns over the next 6 months to a year?
I think that for me, definitely, it is economic development and all efforts we need to do for economic development. I think that the political stability is also important, but I mean, government has quite a few how to influence that. Without relaxing and enjoying, I mean. There is room for improving economic regulations in that way to attract more foreign investment. So that's very simple, actually, for me. And I think that should dominate our agenda for many years. And I think that we need to build up very strong Georgia with very strong economy. And I think that is the key. And I think that in parallel, we should never forget Abkhazia and South Ossetia, and it one day will rejoin.
Okay. All right. Well, let me thank Mr. Bendukidze for long discussion with us on questions of interest, and we look forward to seeing him again one of these days back in Washington. Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you.